With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Why don't you ask me what it feels like to be a freak?
The power of a new generation.
Greetings, and you're listening to Savage Science Radio here at Jackalope 105 FM, and I'm your host, Tracy Savage. Well, today marks a monumental day in the world of physics because scientists at CERN in Switzerland have announced the discovery of a new elementary particle, the first new particle since the Z boson was discovered way back in 1983. Curiously, though, CERN is not calling this the Higgs boson exactly, but rather a particle consistent with what the Higgs boson is theorized to be. It is entirely possible, although unlikely, that CERN has discovered another particle which would be even more exciting. But if you're not up to speed on what the Higgs boson / God, quote-unquote, particle actually is, we will do a whole show dedicated to understanding this next week. This week, however, we are presenting an hour-long lecture from the McGill University's Lauren Trottier Public Science Symposium on the confrontation and threat of pseudoscience in contemporary society with none other than James Randi at the helm. He's exposed all sorts of frauds, deceits, cheats, fakes, liars, charlatans, and other fare with total ease, and I hope you enjoy this presentation of the amazing James Randi.
Well, I've seen full houses before, but this is ridiculous. You'll have to take your heads off or something. It looks far too populated. But nonetheless, I'll see what I can do with it. My name is James Randi, as you probably guessed, and I have to disappoint some folks that are here this evening. I know that they were looking forward to this number, but I will not be doing my naked dance on fire. As a matter of fact, I must confess to you that there hasn't been that much call for it in later years. Some people are clamoring for it, but you'll have to miss that. Now, I'm a magician by profession, as you've been told by those who introduced me, and I thank you for the introduction. A magician by profession. Now, what does a magician do? A magician is a performer who goes out and fools people and lies to the people, but makes it very clear that they're being lied to. There's an expertise in the magic profession that maybe you don't recognize. I know how people can be fooled, and I know how they fool themselves. The second part is even more important than the first part. You can be fooled, ladies and gentlemen. You already have been fooled. And you've been fooled on a couple of different bases here. And I came walking out here, and I took the microphone. I didn't really need it. It's simply a beard trimmer. This microphone does not work, by the way. Thank you for your services, but no thank you. I have the microphone concealed here underneath the beard somewhere. I always have a hard time finding it. It takes me 2 or 3 days sometimes. Now, I say that you can be fooled, and I prove it to you by demonstrating how you have been fooled. Okay? But you've been fooled on another basis, too. For example, I walked out here. I managed to avoid the tripod there, and I struggled over to the desk because my eyesight is really rather poor. I normally use glasses. Oh, these are not glasses. No, these are just empty frames. Now, why would a grown man, I'm certainly grown, well, not up that way, but in age, why would he step out in front of you and wear nothing but frames for glasses? To prove a point to you. Oh, God, they're ugly. I didn't know that. Now I can see you. Hi there. I use a couple of bits of deception like this regularly to show you that you can be fooled very subtly. Now, no one suspected that I wasn't using the microphone that I held in my hand. It turned out to be a beard trimmer. I use it for beard trimming, you see. That's right. Not too many people here have a requirement for that. Well, there's a gentleman down there who certainly does. Thank you, sir. I'm glad you showed up. Make me feel more secure. But you see, it's a bit of a trick that is done inadvertently. I don't have to come out here and say, I'm speaking into this microphone now to talk to you, and it's amplifying my voice through the electronic set. No. And I didn't have to say, oh, I'm looking at you through my glasses. No, I didn't have to deceive you by making a statement. I allowed you to believe what I wanted you to believe. And that's very much a lot of the way the magicians, professional magicians, work. Professional magicians are very respectable people. They are entertainers. They are actors playing the part of real magicians. So I often use the term conjurer, which is used in the UK. And as I say, I just came back from the UK, and they understand what I'm talking about with conjurer, and many American audiences don't know, and they don't care. Now, I want to discuss with you the attitude and the conclusions of average persons when they're subjected to certain sensory input. You see that people don't react the same way, necessarily. Generally speaking, yes. But suppose you're sitting out in a bit of a park and in a small town that you haven't been in before. You're waiting for someone to come along to pick you up or whatever. And you know that there's a riding academy around the corner. And you're relaxing on the park bench and you hear hoofbeats. Now, you're reasonably intelligent folks. I assume that much, and I had every good reason to believe it. Hearing the sound of hoofbeats coming from around the corner, what do various kinds of people expect? You would expect, and I would expect, a horse. A rational person will say, oh, there's a horse somewhere around here. But there are irrational folks out there, and some of these people, they will go for the wildest explanation they can hear of or even imagine. I can see one turning to the other and saying, oh, did you hear that? Yeah, I wonder what it is. It must be a zebra. Not very likely. There aren't too many Canadian zebra that I know of. But then the real woo-woos, that's a term I use for people who will believe anything if a celebrity tells them, and they'll believe it if anybody who has a loud enough voice or is politically connected tells it to them and looks at them very endearingly and asks them to believe it and to vote for them at the same time, I'm sure. These woo-woo people will not even say zebra. They go a step further. They turn to others and say, what could that be? Oh, it must be a unicorn. So you see the difference. There are three grades, rational people, ordinary folks, you know, that think logically, and then the people who think a little far out, and then the woo-woos, and the world is full of the woo-woos, I can tell you that. They're all over the place, particularly on the media. Oh, I can tell you lots of stories on that. Now, you were told that we have a $1 million prize at the James Randi Educational Foundation. We refer to that affectionately as the JREF, J-R-E-F. This prize has been offered to so-called psychics and prophets and paranormalists and whatnot for many years now, for 11 years, as a matter of fact, but nobody has come anywhere near taking it. There are two stages. The first stage is the preliminary stage. That's a good name for it, don't you think? No one has even passed the preliminary stage, in which the standards are very low. You don't really have to be a wonderful performer, you know, tightrope stuff. No, nothing like that. You just have to be able to do what you say you can do. If you do that, hey, you passed the preliminary stage. Now we tighten things down. I'm getting a little worried. My $1 million might be out the window. It's not my $1 million. It was given to the foundation, I must say. So I don't care. You want $1 million here? No, not quite. I wouldn't want to lose that money, I can assure you. But the final stage, the second stage of the the challenge procedure, the protocol and such, would award the $1 million if the person would pass the test. But no one has ever gotten to that point. We've never had to do the test because they all fail in the first aspect of it, in the very first aspect. And we're going to go into a few of the details on that. Now, SWIFT, S-W-I-F-T, named after Jonathan Swift, a very famous gentleman from many, many decades back who challenged people with his satire. You all know of Gulliver's Travels. I don't know if you know about the rest of Gulliver's Travels, aside from Laputa and a few places like that. But I can tell you, you should read it. It's really very stimulating and thought-provoking. Now, Swift, as I say, our webpage, gets approximately 9,000 hits a day internationally. That's a lot. And we've had our system slow down and stop on weekends sometimes when something exciting happens in the news. Now, I'll give you some examples of the things that have gotten people's attention over the years about which they've asked us questions. I happen to be wearing Florsheim shoes. Florsheim shoes, it's brand of shoes. It's been around for something like 120 years now. The family has been very happy with the success of the company, of course, and I wear them almost uniformly, and they're very satisfactory. Good product, really good product. One with a lot of integrity, very carefully designed and manufactured. And then the Florsheim family sold the company to an entrepreneur. Oh my, stand back. That could be very dangerous. Within a matter of a couple of months, people in the stores in the Florsheim stores were being offered Magnaforce shoes. Ooh, that sounds powerful. Well, it cost $25 a pair more to have them equipped with the Magnaforce device. It turned out that all it was a set of three magnets, one at the toe, one at the instep, one on the heel, little neodymium magnets inserted into the sole of the shoe. You paid, as I say, $25 more for that. And they said that this would help circulate the hemoglobin around your body. Duh. Now, hemoglobin has Fe, iron that is, as part of its formula, but it doesn't react to magnets. They said that, you know, the stagnant blood in your legs would rush down to your feet. I wonder if it would stay there. They didn't say anything what happened to it after. No? But these were the Magnaforce shoes, and they were widely advertised. Oh, but they were endorsed also by a PhD. Ooh, that's got to get your attention. This PhD is named Gary Null, N-U-L-L, appropriately named. And Gary Null, it turns out, got his PhD for $40 from a diploma mill. But Florsheim didn't know that. So they hired him to make the statements. And he endorsed the whole thing. Oh, he gave a wonderful physical theory about how well Magnaforce shoes work. Well, the Florsheim company found out about this rather quickly. They bought the company back, and they're back in the saddle again, and you cannot buy any more Magnaforce shoes. I hate to disappoint you, but you cannot get Magnaforce shoes. Then gravity defier shoes. What? They simply have springs in the heels, so as you bounce along, you're doing this, and you look like a fool. It looks like you're walking on carbon tacks or something. They don't help you. How could springs in your heels help you increase your power of the walk? Or it simply doesn't happen. Energy doesn't come from nowhere. It comes from somewhere, and there's no energy being added in there. The Q-ray, oh, the Q-ray is a wonderful one. That's still doing very, very strongly. This is a simple little U-shaped piece of metal. It comes in gold and gold plate and silver and various other metals. I guess lead, too, probably somewhere along the line. And it's supposed to help golfers particularly. Well, it helps the manufacturer, but I don't think it helps the golfers one bit. We have all kinds of gas savers, that is petrol savers, for your car. They are simply a string of magnets that you tie around the carburetor of your car. It doesn't do a thing for it. And it's been tested endlessly. But the American government, I don't know about the Canadian government, but the American government has not been able to do anything to get them off the market. Because every time they get a complaint against them, they change the advertising very slightly. They just put a hyphen in or something like that. They change the advertising. There are water purifiers run by magnets. There's a magnetic pitcher into which you can pour your water and leave it for 20 minutes or so, and it's much better. It lines up the atoms and the molecules and the graphics on the fourth floor, whatever, I don't know. Supposed to, anyway. Now, this is a serious thing. When I was a kid, my parents found out about radon water. Now, radon gas is radioactive, comes from radium and other elements of that nature, and it is extremely dangerous. And yet, radon water, my parents almost bought it, but it was too expensive, which made me very happy. They couldn't afford it. But people in their day, about the time that I was born, were buying pitchers that had magnifiers of some kind in them and radon water and chemicals you put into the water. These people literally glowed in the dark and died shortly after. There were thousands of deaths due to imbibing radon water. Now, this is something that I'm sure you've all seen. Your pet blankets. Go into any pet store, you'll get a real kick out of this. Just don't giggle too loud. They throw you out right away. Giggle a little later or softer, and they won't throw you out. Well, maybe not. Pet blankets with magnets buried in them, and your pet rests much easier. That's my beer, isn't it? The other thing that I'm sure you got to be familiar with for a while, at least, is laundry balls. Oh, my. They were made for 85 washes and for 150 washes, two different prices. They were taken apart. They had nothing in them but regular water, plastic balls that just squished around in the washer. And you had to count. You had to count very carefully on a piece of paper there how many times you used it, because the first one was only good for 85 washes and the second for 150 washes. You could have used those things as tennis balls or for anything else. You could have used them 1,000 times. They wouldn't do anything for your wash. But they were taken apart, and the Drug Administration in the United States looked at them, but with simply tap water with blue food coloring in it. Nothing else. And yet these things sold for a very large price, different prices in different parts of the country. The Smarter Image is the name of a chain of stores in the United States that sold them. They've now gone out of business, and it couldn't happen to nicer folks. So I deal a lot with religious claims, but I want to make one thing very plain to you. The James Randi Educational Foundation is not an atheist organization. I am an atheist, yes, an atheist of the second kind. I say that I can't prove that there is no God, and I don't see any definitive evidence to prove the existence of any deity. That doesn't mean I say God doesn't exist, or that any gods don't exist, because I can't prove it. I also can't prove that there isn't a unicorn someplace in South Africa, but that doesn't mean there are or aren't any unicorns. I think it's highly doubtful, but what do I know? Now, I just recently had a heart operation. It seems to have worked rather well, I think. It was a cardiac bypass, a triple, as a matter of fact, and I survived very nicely. I always tell people that there was no homeopathy used, there was no acupuncture, no praying or chanting or incense or anything like that. I used the thing that you may have heard of. Medical science. You've heard of that? I hope that you keep that in mind, ladies and gentlemen. They saved me from not being here tonight. And at the same time, I had chemotherapy for 6 months for another condition. I'm doing very well at 82. Hey, so in another 15 years, I expect to be invited back, okay? Oh, thank you. Now, I must tell you that when I do these lectures, and I do them all over the world. I'm on my way to Australia next, as a matter of fact. And, Canada to Australia, that's a big jump. And culturally, yes, as well. But I won't get into that. No, Australia, you know, I love the country and I love the people. As I do you folks here, of course, because this is where my roots are. But boy, are there differences between the two of them. One is a cowboy country and the other one is Canada. But they're really people of great integrity, and I really love them, and I do everything I can for and with them. Now, as I say, I do these lectures all over the world, and I often get the academics coming to me afterwards, and they say things like, you know, these people that believe in this sort of nonsense, Randy, they must be really stupid. Now, that triggers my defense And I say, wait a minute, really? You think that people would believe in this sort of thing are stupid? Well, they must be pretty dense. So then what I do is I show them some sort of a brain buster, a bit of mentalism of some kind, you see. And that usually makes them rear back and say, wow. And I say, wait a minute, are you dumb? Are you stupid? Can you apply that to yourself because you got fooled by something like a simple magic trick? I'm going to do something for you now, show you the kind of thing that I would do to try to convince these people they shouldn't think of other people as being so stupid. I talked to a young lady in the audience, and in a big audience here, I can't find her. Where is the young lady that I... way back there, yes, hi. Put your hand up against the... Okay. Now, I'm going to... You don't have a microphone, and I do, so there, ha-ha. But I'm... So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to tell the folks here the arrangement we made, okay? I went out into the hall, and I saw you standing there looking pretty, and I thought, well, I'll probably take advantage of this show. No, I didn't say that. No, I didn't. No. What I said was, would you like to participate in a small experiment? And you gracefully agreed, and I asked you to... the book was... I don't have the book. I don't know where it is. But it's a guide to Montreal, am I correct? Yeah. Oh, no, no, no. Oh, no, no. The one you eventually used. What was that leaflet? It was... it was a leaflet that we got from the university here anyway. Something that was in circulation around there. And I ask you, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, I simply ask you to turn to any page in there and to... run your finger over the page, and don't open it up, don't open it up, no, 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 don't let anyone see it, no, please. You remember what it is, I'm sure. And so I asked you just to run your finger around there and stop at any word, not a word like if or but or something like that, a little more significant word perhaps. Now, this experiment is one of those things that works sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't work all that well. So we'll give it a try, but it's called mentalism. I apologize for the result if it's wrong, but I'm going to step to the board over here, and I have a... Oh, someone picked up the big magic marker that was on the floor here. Where is it? Oh, it's up top here. It flew, you see, a miracle. How do these things happen? I just don't understand. I'm going to go to a blank page here, and... I'm going to start writing, but I'm not going to look at the young lady because if I do, I might be getting body language, you see. Body language is, if I'm right, she goes... And if I'm wrong, she... So I'm going to try not to get any body language. But I'm just going to start writing here and see if I can come up with something that might be significant. Oh, are you breaking up the funeral? When I walked out here, I thought it was a funeral. I wasn't too sure. And it may be. Okay, I'm going to start writing here, and I won't look at the young lady, and I'll just make some wild guesses here. No, this doesn't, no. This may be one case where it's not going to work, and I have to apologize in advance. No. Well... Very bad magic marker. No. Wait a minute. Possibly. I don't know. Well, the young lady, where is she again? Oh, over there, sorry. If I walk that far across the stage, and after you won't be over there, you'll be there, right? I should know geometry enough to figure that out. All right, would you tell the audience, please, what was the word that you chose at random from off that page?
Tampon.
Really? That was the only suitable word on the page? I want to know what that's all about. Well, obviously... Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I've done this before... And when it happens, I'm really astonished. Come on, I know I can tear the paper. I'm not that weak. That was delicate. I got it upside down. Now, folks, the young lady was not in cahoots with me. She didn't cooperate in any way. What I told you about what she did was absolutely correct. And she is not a confederate of mine. I just chose her out of the crowd there that was waiting to be let in, the maddening crowd, as they say. And she volunteered to do it. She is not a confederate. But many people say, oh, she's got to be a confederate. It wouldn't have worked otherwise. And that was one word taken from quite a few thousand, and the only restriction I made was don't make it and or but or something simple like that. And she chose a doozy, didn't she? Yeah, I wasn't expecting that at all. Okay, this is what they call mentalism. It's simply a magic trick that appears to be done entirely with the brain. Wrong. There are all kinds of things that can be used in doing mentalism. You're familiar with Darren Brown, are you, or are you? From the UK? Well, you may have seen some of his performances that are really quite remarkable. I know Darren very, very well. And my good friend Banachek, who was one of the alpha kids, and that's another story altogether, but you can read my webpage and find out about it. These people are mentalists, and they are magicians. They are conjurers, if you will. And they're very honest folks because they tell you, I'm going to fool you, and I'm going to use trickery to do it. And they go right ahead and do it, as I just did here. I use this example of doing mentalism to show you again that you can be fooled. And some other people are being fooled all the time. And it's scary to tell you about. I got to do a little demo for you here. This is an invention a fella came up with. It's called the counterfeit detector pen. Ooh, that sounds as if it's handy. It'll detect counterfeit bills. Oh, yes, it will. We were told all about that. Wait a minute, I have a wallet in here, and I hope I have some money in it. Oh, I don't have the Canadian money in here, I don't think, or do I know? Yes, I think I put it in here. I'll be with you in a minute. I've got to search around, find why I've gotten myself all messed up again here. No, that's not it. Come on. Get off there, you fool. I talk to my props a great deal. Did it get in there or not? I guess it didn't. Well, I'll just have to pass up that demonstration. I'm sorry. I didn't have, I wanted to have an American builder show it to you with. But the Drymark pen is patented to detect counterfeit money. What it is made by the Drymark Pen Company, and it simply has in it iodine, of all things, tincture of iodine. It's that simple. Now, if you stroke it on a bill and the bill turns black, that is where you stroke it, they say that means it's counterfeit. Oh, really, is it? How do you prove that? Well, they say that counterfeit bills are printed on cheap paper. Come on, friends. Would any counterfeiter print a bill on cheap paper when he's going to turn it into a $100 bill? Let's get real. You would spend the best money for that particular paper. Now, regular currency in any country in the world will not react to this pen of iodine because iodine turns black when it hits starch. Regular paper, ordinary notepaper, does have starch in it. It's called sizing. And the sizing that's in there is put there in order to make it be handled better in duplicating machines and such. And when it goes into the duplicating machine, it slides around much easier. It functions much easier. That's why they put it in there. And it turns black when you stroke it with a pen filled with iodine. But that's the only function that this pen has. It doesn't detect counterfeit money at all. I called the Secret Service in the United States. They handle that sort of thing, counterfeit money. And I asked them about it. I said, does it work? And he said, wait, I'll have to look it up in the book. And he went flip, 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 flip through the book. And he came up with the answer. He said, sir, it is not dependable. Does that mean it doesn't work? He said, well, he said, you could say that. And I told him, I said, well, why don't you say that? He said, because it's not in the book. After all, he is an employee of the American government. He wants to be perfectly correct. He doesn't do anything that's not strictly kosher with the American government. That's a good excuse, is it? No, I don't think that's much of an excuse. But things like counterfeit pen detectors are sold all the time. They're in every market. They're on television constantly. But wait a minute, does that mean that we're being let down someplace? Yes, at a certain level we are being let down. And on many aspects of being let down, it lies with the scientific community. I got a call a few years back. My office assistant answered and put the hand over the phone and said, it's a laboratory in California. I said, okay, I'll pick up the phone. I picked it up. The gentleman said, Mr. Andy? And I said, yes. He said, I'm speaking to you from Lawrence Livermore Laboratories. Now, Lawrence Livermore Laboratories, believe me, are very, very prestigious. I swear you can go there and throw a brick in any direction and hit a PhD in physics. Not that you want to necessarily, but it may be a public service. You can't tell. So the fellow said, I'm sure you have lost your $1 million. I said, really? And I trembled, of course. Yeah, sure. And he said, we have a fellow here named Ronnie Marcus. And I said, and what does Mr. Marcus do? He said, he can do miracles that we have no explanation for, and we're PhD physicists. Well, I was suitably impressed, of course. And I said, what can he do? And he said, well, one demonstration that he does consistently is he takes a bottle of matches, a box of matches, regular wooden matches, like this kind of a thing, and he can make it do wonderful things. He said, we went out to a grocery store, and he asked us to get him a box of matches like this, and we bought 24 in a package. This is science now, remember. They don't buy one box. They can't, for one thing, but they bought 24 of them, and then they took them back to the lab, and they mixed them up to randomize them, and they took one at random without looking. See? This is science. And then they weighed it very, very carefully to within micrograms. And they took out one of the matches and they stroked it to make sure that it lit. Ooh, and it lights. So it's an ordinary match and it's an ordinary matchbox. And they gave it to Mr. Marcus. And Mr. Marcus accepted it gratefully. And he said, I'm going to do something with this that matchboxes should not do. And this is what he did. He sat it on the back of his hand like that, and he just gestured, and it stood up on the back of his hand. And then he relaxed a bit, and it went back down again. And they said, now, we have examined it with polarized light and infrared light and the whole thing, and we have x-rayed it. We've examined it very, very thoroughly. But every time he puts it on the back of his hand, it stands up, and then it goes back down again. And I said, well, but at that time, I was also signaling to my office assistant, who went into the next room and picked down from the shelf Martin Gardner's book of impromptu tricks, because he was an amateur magician and he knew the trick. It's a very, very simple trick. I don't know how it's done, mind you, but I'm working on it. Oh. And he found the trick in the book, you see, and he turned to the page and he went to the copy machine and he copied the page of the book, because he knew what I was going to do. And I said to the scientist in California, I said, do you have a fax machine there? And he said, oh, yes. He said, may I have the number? I gave it to Andrew, and I said, I just signaled, yeah, go, go, go. So he went to the fax machine. He laid it down. He dialed the number. And the fellow on the phone said, oh, the fax machine is starting to buzz right now. And I said, read what comes through there, and then let me have your opinion. This is a simple trick, ladies and gentlemen. You simply leave the box open a little bit like that when you lay it down on the back of your hand, you see? And then when you close the box, you pinch some skin from the back of the hand, and then it goes up, you see? And then it goes back down again when you relax a bit. But it goes up at your will. Isn't that astonishing? This is a kid's trick. An impromptu trick, right? Lay down. Behave yourself. Stand up. There you go. Hey! So, So the physicist on the other end of the phone started to read it, and I heard him reading it, and I say glued to the receiver, and he said, Martin Gardner, and I said, I see, a box of matches, yes, and take out some of the matches, and I said, I said, hello? He said, oh, I'm here, all right. Click. He hung up the phone, but he saw how naive he had been. Not stupid, no, just naive. He didn't know how these things were done. I don't expect a scientist to know how magic tricks are done. But I do expect scientists, when they get into trouble by examining so-called psychics, to call a magician, an experienced, qualified magician, and ask them if they have any opinion. Now, Johnny Carson did that with me, and I gave him the opinion. He was a good amateur magician himself, but some of those things puzzled him. When he wanted to know, he called me. But Lawrence Livermore has never called me back. I don't know why. It's very strange, isn't it? Don't you think? Now, I have to show you something which it's a slightly different model from the ADE 561. Sounds familiar? No, of course not. It's a dowsing rod. It detects explosives. Oh, wow. Well, the American government spent $1.2 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars of American tax money, that's some of mine, you see, spent that to give it to the Iraqis so they could detect bombs and explosives when they came in to their area. And I have a contact who I won't even tell you what agency he's with, but he keeps me up on this sort of thing, and he said, not too long ago, a big armored truck drove in. They didn't check it for explosives. They just used a silly thing like this, a dowsing rod. Oh, it's much bigger than this. Hey, this is the real thing. This isn't one of your amateur machines, you see. And it has a switch on the front here. You turn it on. You turn this one on, and the needle jumps up. And a little light lights here. Looks impressive, doesn't it? I'm waiting for the photograph. Yeah. Looks impressive, doesn't it? Yeah, sure it does. And it's got a rotating handle on the bottom. See, when you hold it by the handle here, it'll swing all over the place, and it's indicating the board over there, you see. I can make it indicate any damn thing I want, you see. Oh, look at that, indicating the... Sir, you're being indicated. I think you're an explosive. Now, wait a minute. I'm going to unscrew a piece on it here so you can explain or understand a little bit more. This is the brass receptacle. At the bottom it says, you must not undo this, or the warranty is void. Ooh. So I can't get my money back. This was actually sent to me by somebody who was swindled by it, and we put it into our museum of curios. There's a little brass container on the bottom here, and it does screw apart with great difficulty. And I screwed it apart to look inside. And guess what was in there? Green aquarium sand. That's all. It was half full with green aquarium sand. I know because I went to the aquarium store and I showed it to them. They said, oh yeah, that'll be the stuff here. And they gave me an identical sample of it. Green aquarium sand apparently can pick up explosives. That's strange. I had no idea that it would do that sort of thing. And wait a minute, you saw the little light go on here, didn't you? Yes, a little red light. Okay, let me show you what's inside this. And it says right on here very clearly, there are no user serviceable parts inside. That's true. Opening the case will void any warranty or guarantee or return option. Ooh, I'm going to be out $740 to buy one of these things. And we gave $1.2 billion to Iraq to buy them. I'll open it up. Let's see what we find in here. Oh, it looks very impressive. What? I'm afraid of a screw in here. Let me just take that out. There we go. Put that aside. And, circuitry. Look, there's electric stuff in here. Well, we looked at what this particular printed circuit is. It's dated 1979. And it has condenser capacitors and things like that on it, and lots of little resistors. We looked up the serial number on it. It is part of an early TV remote control device. And that detects explosives. Oh, wait a minute. You see the red and, rainbow wire here, connected to nothing. It's glued onto the other side of the board with hot glue. It's not even connected. Oh, there is a circuit in here with the switches and such. All it does is light the light on the outside of the machine here. That little red light that you see there, that's all it does. It's not connected in any other way. We spent my American government, mind you, $1.2 billion. But wait a minute, it was sold in Canada, too, under a couple of different names, exactly the same instrument. It does not work. Dowsing is a complete, total farce and a delusion. Now, we have offered our prize, our $1 billion prize, to dowsers all these years. And they always, oh, yes, this will be 100%. Oh, this will be successful. Oh, Mr. Randy, you've lost your money. There's no question of it. And they can't do what they say they can do. It's what we call the ideomotor reaction. It doesn't mean idiot, no. Ideomotor reaction. The ideomotor reaction is such that when you have one of these unstable systems in your hand, and by the slightest little slope of your hand, or turning of it, or twisting, you can make it move in any direction you want, you tend to do that when you know what the answer is. If you know that the thing you're looking for is sitting over there, the rod will swing right around and face to it, and you'll have found it. But when it's blinded, and you don't know where it is in the audience, it will not swing to point to it, because you don't know where it is, and the ideomotor reaction doesn't take place. That's a swindle. Now, in Iraq and all over that area of the world, people are dying every day because this is the stupid thing they use to detect bombs. And they don't detect bombs. I almost mentioned the agency. This fellow that I know over there in one of the American agencies, a major one, he told me that just the day before that they had lost 8 soldiers in a Jeep. They were pedaling along the highway, and they had been tested to see if anybody had planted bombs on it or anything. Oh, no, you're perfectly all right. 100 yards down the highway, boom, the whole thing went up. They were all killed. And that's what happens every day from these quacks, these fakes, these frauds. And in England, the ADE 561 was manufactured there and shipped all over the world. They've now prohibited from being exported. Of course, there are ways of doing it, and it's done every day, and they're still showing up in Iraq. It's criminal. It should not be allowed. But there's another thing that's quite criminal, too, and I'm sure you're much more familiar with this. Homeopathy. Now, I'd like to see a show of hands. How many people think they might be able to give some sort of a description of what homeopathy is supposed to do? Let's see hands. Oh, great number. All right, this gentleman down here with the attractive beard. In a good, loud voice, would you tell us what you think homeopathy probably is?
What it is?
Yes. What does it consist of? How does it work, or does it work?
Well, first of all, it says that light cures light,
yes. That's correct.
Something poisons you. The same poison is going to cure
you. Okay, that's a very good description. I thank you. Yeah, like cures like. This was originated by a fellow, an Austrian fellow who lived in Switzerland. In Switzerland, most of the quackery we have today comes from Switzerland. I hate to accuse him of that, but it does. That's on the record. Well, Hahnemann said that like cures like. Now, what that means is that you take a very, very small amount of the substance that could produce the same symptoms in your body, and you take that very small amount, very, very highly diluted, or you have no idea how much diluted, and you administer that to the patient, and the patient is cured. Really? Well, let me give you some facts. The most popular of all of the homeopathic medicines you can buy in pharmacies all over the place is a compound made to relieve the symptoms of flu, and it's made from a duck liver. They could make plenty of homeopathic medicine from one duck liver. Duck livers are very small, little tiny guys like this. The duck may be allowed to die of old age or kindness or something like that. Doesn't have to be slaughtered either. Check. There we go. All right. You can't get good help these days. One. Oh, hey, I'm up. Hello. All right, I'll talk very slowly then. Now, with one duck liver, now this is a fact, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, is it something? Oh, I've got something else in there. Hello? Yes, I have something else in my pocket which was touching the switch. I apologize to you, sir. Great. And we should all applaud the gentleman. He wasn't doing it, I was. Thank you. Now, you can make from one duck liver enough of these pills, homeopathic pills. Are you ready? You're all seated? Good. Well, the people in the back may fall down. With the sun at the center of a big sphere and the orbit of Pluto, which used to be a planet, way on the outside, and then a little bit beyond that, you would make a sphere that could be filled with homeopathic pills made from that one duck liver. The dilution is so great, you have no idea. Now, I'm going to illustrate for you just how big it is. A I lost my pen again. Where is my pen? Here it is, someplace in here. No, I've lost the pen permanently this time. Where did I put this funny thing? There we are. Thank you. Now, this is the mathematics lesson. 10 to the power 1 is 10. We all know that, okay? 10 to the power 2, or 10 squared, is 100. It's the number of zeros after the 1, okay? And 10 to the third, of course, is 1,000, etc. Now, they will use dilution. But what they do is the rule of homeopathy, you take one part of the active substance, whatever that may be, and you have to shake it up in 10 parts of water, but it has to be also shaken in 3 different directions 10 times. 10 is the magic number that we use. Don't look at me, I didn't make it up. So you take the compound, you put it in there, and you shake it 10 times this way, 10 times this way, and 10 times this way. That's a one solution. That's one part in 10. That's what you would call a one solution. Now you make a two solution by taking one part of that water and putting it in 10 parts of water, and chugga chugga chugga, you do the same thing all over again in 3 different directions. That gives you a two solution. And then, as you see, a three solution. It goes on. Oh, they don't use these dilutions at all. Are you ready? They start using the dilutions at 10 to the power of 34. That is 10 followed by 34 zeros. If you think I'm going to write a note, I'm not. I can assure you. But that is well beyond what they call Avogadro's limit, which is 10 to the 23rd. What that means is when it's diluted that much to 10 to the 23rd, there's only a possibility of there being one molecule or atom of the original substance there. When you do it one more time, there's one chance in 10 of there being one atom or molecule, and it keeps on going. 10 to the 24th is very dilute, but oh, wait a minute. They do it all the way up. You seated? Good. All the way up to 10 to the power of 1,500. Incredible. Incredible. That's the dilution. Of course, there's not a trace of the original substance in there, but the vibrations are there. Oh, boy. Vibrations. These people, if you gave them this whole auditorium full of vibrations, they wouldn't know what they were or what to do with them or what they looked like. They just don't know. And the latest thing in the quackery field is quantum vibrations. That's obviously much more powerful even. Now, a fellow named Jacques Benveniste, a French gentleman, whoops, I turned 2 pages, sorry. Jacques Benveniste came up with a wonderful idea. He founded a company called DigiBio. Now, I must tell you, and you've probably heard of them, they award every year out of Harvard, they award the Ig Nobel Prize. And Jacques Benveniste is the only man who ever won it twice. What a distinction. He won it first time for this whole theory of homeopathy. And then he won it for this circuit. I hope you're ready for this. Very bad artwork here. I apologize for that. These are 2 beakers of water, okay? This one over here, this is homeopathic. That's been treated. Whoops, there you go. It's been treated the right way, so that's the powerful stuff. This is plain water. Boo, hiss. Nothing there. Just ordinary water right out of the tap. So what you do is you make a circuit like this. These are batteries. There's a switch here. And remember I said that 10 was the magic number in homeopathy? So you run the wire up here, and you run 10 turns of wire around here. You lead across over here, and you run 10 turns of wire around there. And then you connect it over here like that. And then you close the switch here. For how long? 10 seconds. You see, they can be instructed. They really quick. They pick it up quick like that. Yes, 10 seconds. And DigiBio will do this by credit card, of course, or you can send them a check in advance. It's got to be a registered check, of course. But they will do this, and that makes this water over here, the ordinary tap water, into homeopathic water. Now, I do agree that they both have the same power to cure. It's called zero. Because you cannot tell the difference. Oh, I did a test of homeopathy with the Royal Society in the UK and with the BBC. We did a test, and I said I would give them $1 million. I'd waive the preliminary test, but if they could win this test, I'd give it to them directly. I was committed legally to do it. I gave them the account number, the whole thing. They had access to it. And they did a test of homeopathy. It came out absolutely negative. And the homeopaths who designed the test and approved of the protocol, and were, oh, very, very stiff, oh, you're going to win the prize, no problem whatsoever. Hallelujah. Yeah, right. They didn't win the prize, and they immediately let them said, oh, well, there was something wrong with the test then, because we know that homeopathy works. This is the kind of people these folks are. Homeopathy is a total delusion and a fake. It does not work. And I have offered the $1 million prize for 11 years now to any homeopath or anybody else who can prove that there is a difference between ordinary water and homeopathic water. They should be lined up at the door out here, beating on the door. They should be lined up with the scythes and pitchforks and the torches, as they did in The Bride of Frankenstein, remember? No rioting, go to your homes. There's no beast. Wrong, there is a beast, and it's called homeopathy. This is a silly thing. Sure, it's a silly thing, but we're stuck with it. We are stuck with these medicines that are in pharmacies all across this country and the United States, and certainly in England, where it's very big. Even Prince Charles said that it was good. And we know, well, it's got to be good if Prince Charles says it is. Would he make a mistake? Ooh, of course not. Yeah. Now, I have, I heard a sad tale from, you see, they say that that you've got to be very careful about homeopathy. You can take as much of it as you want, but that you've got to take it on a regular basis. In fact, this fellow in Florida, poor man, he died of an overdose. He forgot to take it. I'm glad you got it. Died of an overdose. He forgot. Never mind. It's you have to work on it. Now, they say that it's natural, you see. That's the word that they all use in all this quack medicine. It's natural. Well, bird poo and gravel are natural, too, and I don't eat them. Do you? But they're natural, so they must be okay for you. Now, who's responsible for all this nonsense we're going through here? I'll tell you in one word. The media. Because they don't care. They don't give a damn one way or the other whether what they say, what they publish, hurts people or misleads them or costs them money or their emotional security, as long as the sponsors are happy. Montel Williams, you know who Montel Williams is. Okay, he's off the air now on his regular program, but he supported Sylvia Brown, this harridan of a woman there who was carrying on and taking all of his support in the whole business, and he was raving over her. And he appeared on a radio program. I've got the tape. I've got the audio tape of it. And he was asked, Montel, do you believe in psychics? And he said, oh, no, of course not, especially not Sylvia Brown. The fellow said, but you have her on your program all the time. He said, oh, yes, she brings me sponsors. Bottom line, now that kind of a person, ladies and gentlemen, pardon the expression, but this is what they're known as. They're known as the whores of the media business. They will do anything in order to please the sponsors, the people who pay them money. They don't care whether it hurts people or not. Now, PBS is the public broadcasting system in the United States of America. And they regularly have people like Gary Null. He's the fake PhD that I told you about. Wayne Dyer, Deepak Chopra. Oh, there's a winner for you. These people, they use them during fund pleadings. And that's a very important part of PBS's business to try to keep operating. It's very important for them. I gave up contributing to them a long time ago when they started to use these quacks and these nonsense purveyors. Deepak Chopra, I have a challenge with any reporter. If we're near a bookstore, I take them to the bookstore and I say, go to the Deepak Chopra section. It's huge, just huge. Hundreds of books. I say, take any book off the shelf, turn to any page, and within two pages on either side, I'll show you a scientific howler. Because Deepak Chopra doesn't know science in any respect whatsoever. But he's getting fabulously rich doing this sort of thing. Now, I have sent out my challenge to all these people for the $1 million. You know the name John Edward. Of course, you've seen him on television, I'm sure. He's the one who talks to the audience. He talks to the dead. I, too, can talk to the dead. Do they answer? No. Why? Because they're dead. That's not a mystery to me. But John Edward, I sent him a personal notarized certified copy, as a matter of fact, of the challenge, saying we would pay him $1 million if he could prove that what he was doing was the real thing. Well, we didn't hear from him. We did hear from his agent. The letter was very brief, Mr. Randy, not even dear Mr. Randy, can you imagine? I knew this was heavy. He said, Mr. Randy, John Edward does not respond to criticism. Yours truly. Can you answer, I mean, when the dean calls you up and wants to discuss something with you, I don't respond to criticism, Dean. Thank you. Goodbye. I wouldn't try that if I were you. And Larry King, she told Larry King, Sylvia Brown did, that she didn't know how to find me when she was supposed to answer the challenge. She agreed to do the challenge. Oh, yeah, for the $1 million. She agreed on his program in front of a huge audience internationally. She agreed to do it. But then she said she couldn't find me. Wait a minute. She talks to dead people and I'm alive. And I'm in the phone book as well. I'm sure she finds a phone book someplace if she looks hard enough. And Google has 1.4 million references to me and my foundation. So I think she could probably find a way of contacting me somehow. Ladies and gentlemen, I've got to tell you how grateful I am to you to invite me back to McGill after 15 years. I've been through a lot since then. Heart bypass, cancer, chemotherapy, the whole thing. Medical science, as I said earlier, it saved me from not being here. And I would like to be back again. Another 15 years will be a good timing, I think. Ho, ho, ho. I'm 82 now, so you do the mathematics. Point is that I'm very, very grateful for the committee having invited me here. And I hope that I have caused you to learn something, to sit up and pay attention. You must know, and that's my bottom line here, that you can be swindled easily if you're up against technology that you don't understand. If you believe the media, if you believe the people who advertise these things, you're doing yourself and your family a great disservice. Be more critical. Critical thinking is the thing that's going to save you from making big, big errors in your life. Please be critical. And you can get results if you write to television programs and to other branches of the media who would present these things to you without criticism. Be critical. Make your voice heard. You're in a democracy, after all, and that democracy should speak. We're now going to take a round of questions from the audience. There are microphones sitting up here in the middle of the aisle. Just make your way to the microphone. We'll handle you one at a time. Just make your way over there. Fight, step on people. It doesn't make a difference. Just be ruthless just to get there. Thank you very, very much, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very, very much.
And that about does it for this episode of Savage Science Radio. Have a happy 4th, and keep your powder and your pants dry. Happy trails until we meet again.